Okay, Diane.
Okay.
Can you tell me a little bit of what you know about Daddy Grace, his legends here in Charlotte, North Carolina?
Well, what do I know about Daddy Grace? I remember when he used to come every year and had his the parade, and that was a big to-do. Was everybody would get ready for that, and it was, I think it was in September, I guess, around Labor Day weekend. I don't remember the exact dates, or sometime in September. And the theme, everybody used to say it never rained on Daddy Grace's parade, never. And I remember the first year Bishop McCullough was in charge, it rained on his parade, and everybody was saying, see. And he had a reputation. One thing about it, though, he did take care, from what I can remember people telling me, of the people in his church. He helped them own houses and cars. He helped finance it when during that time, Black people couldn't get loans from the bank, or if they, it was very difficult. They didn't have collateral, they didn't have a lot of money, but he would help finance, or their organization did. So he did a lot for the people in his that belonged to his churches across the country. I don't know this story completely. I just remember my father talking about it, that they arrested him for something. I don't know. I think they thought he was flim-flamming his people. I don't know why they arrested him. But when they were arguing the case, I remember somebody said something about a sign that he was a religious man or whatever. But anyway, in the middle of a trial, lightning struck a tree, and the tree fell on the courthouse, and I think he said the judge said case dismissed or something like that. But those are just some of the stories. I remember that he looked like he was larger than life. He was a big man, long, long hair, and he had nails. His nails were so long, they curled up. They were all curly, and they were painted red, white, and blue. Which were the colors of the House of Prayer, too. And I just remember that. And he would just wave down the street. And he used to go down, I think it was First Street. Can't remember. I know it was the side of Second Ward High School. And he was up close because, the streets were narrow. So you really saw him very close. But he was a very, from what I remember as a child, very charismatic man.
Can you tell me about his fingernails?
Just that they were very, very long and curly and on both hands, and he would just wave at you and look at you like, hello there, and just waving, and they were pointing. As I said, they were all painted red, white, and blue, but I don't know who did that, but they must have had a time doing it, because I don't know how long they were, but you know how nails get a certain length, and then they just start curling, and they just look like curly fries. That's what they look like.
Did your mother have any stories about Daddy Grace, or?
Yeah, she told me one. I think when he came to Salisbury, and she went to his to church, to one of his churches, and he saw her, and he said, "Oh, there goes one of my angels. Get her, get her." She said she ran all around the church because he wanted to take her as one of his angels. And Mama, the only thing she said was, "Oh, Lord, my husband's going to kill me." She said, because she wasn't supposed to be there wherever she was going. She was always going somewhere. But she laughs about how he tried to kidnap her, quote, kidnap her, but she was going to be an angel.
So I understand, back to the being a physician, your father being a physician. I remember your mother saying that that although, you would think of a doctor today that, they make a lot of money, obviously with Medicaid, Medicare, and all insurance. Can you kind of explain the financial status of doctors back in the time of Brooklyn, or back before civil rights?
Well, I guess they, being in the a small business is actually what they were. They were dependent on being paid what their patients paid them, but they had to pay their rent, they had to pay the mortgage on their house, they had to pay for their cars and their family. So they, while it was probably, I would guess it would be considered a middle class life, where you did pretty well, but again, you were paid by what the patients could pay. And as I said earlier, it wasn't unusual for them, for doctors to be paid with food or paid overtime, so that patients would come in sometimes and here's a dollar on my bill, or, you know, surgery was only maybe $100 or $200, so they would pay that overtime. Here's $10 on my bill. So once a week, once a month, they would come in and pay some money. So pretty much like they do now, but, you know, they were good for their payments, but it just wasn't a whole lot of money at any one time, because you were really dependent on the economic status of your clients.
That being said, I want to know about the cotillion you participated in. As a middle class, as in middle class society.
Well, I have to say, first, my sister was in one when she grew up, with a few of the participants. I think you said you talked with Vermeil Diamond and a couple other people, so whose parents did quite well in Charlotte, and they had theirs, and then I had mine in 60-something or another. Where we participated, our parents got together and they had a cotillion just for us. And it was interesting because the kids were from Greensboro, Winston, Durham, and Charlotte. So we got a chance to travel to all of those cities and had different functions at each one to meet, you know, it's supposed to be, quote, introducing your daughter to society. Gave us friends all over the state, and so I did enjoy that, and it was quite an affair. It was at the Charlotte Park Center, which is no longer there. It was over near the stadium, over on over Independence Boulevard, over on 7th Street, over that way, somewhere in there. A lot of shows used to come through there. But we all were in our very long white gowns, and our fathers brought us out. And the funniest thing was all of us trying to learn to do the waltz, because, you know, that was the time of the twist and the jerk and all of that, and the pony. Nobody knew how to do the waltz. And we had lessons on how to do the waltz. That was pretty funny. We stepped on a lot of toes. The good thing about it, the dresses were wide and flowing, so they didn't know what you were doing anyway. You just moved. It looked like you were moving nicely, but all our fathers had to teach us. They knew how to do the waltz, so they had to teach us how.
And so what other etiquette, were there etiquette classes you had to take, or what other things did they teach you for the cotillion?
None that I remember, really. You know, they had luncheons and things like that, and they probably said something about, you know, but I know we did a few luncheons, but I don't think we really did any, that I remember, any, quote, etiquette classes as such. I got that at Bennett when I was in college.
Okay. As far as what were other middle class groups that were here in Charlotte for women?
Mm-hmm. For women. Well, not necessarily for women, but we had the Jack and Jill, which had started. I was in the, and my mom started the first chapter of Jack and Jill here in Charlotte. They had been around the country. I'm not sure where they started. But a group of women from Raleigh came down and started the chapter in Charlotte, and I was in the first teen group, so a lot of them started. So there were mostly doctors' wives, preachers' children, professors from the school, from Smith, and President Smith and those things, but we were all in the teen group. And Jack and Jill was a national organization, so you got to travel and meet other people, and so that was kind of a middle class group, I guess, and is still in existence today and does quite well. I found its value to be very important now. What I see for it now is children who live in predominantly white neighborhoods and white schools, and I had a friend of mine that told her she needed to get her daughter in Jack and Jill because she had to understand what it was to be black in America, and have black children and friends to relate with. And it seemed to help her. And I think so it has a value different today For us, it was something to do to get together and have a party or do whatever. But now I see it as a different value for children, and it still has a good place. Can't think of anything else that we belong to. In high school, we had at the start of integration or getting integration started, we had the National Conference of Christians and Jews, which brought together high school students from all over the city of Charlotte, white schools, black schools, because the schools were all segregated, but it gave us a chance to interact and work together. They had the Junior Red Cross, where we would go to the Red Cross office. At that time, you strapped test tubes to blood bank bottles. That's the way they gave it to you, when the little test tube was to draw the blood to test it before they gave the regular blood. But again, it was a way of bringing all the students together from the city of Charlotte. I was in the band, and we used to have, I think we talked about the rivalry between West Charlotte and Second Ward and the Queen City Classic. And I'm sure as you've gone and talked about people, they've talked about the Queen City Classic. That was a big thing. that was a big thing back then. So it was an annual football game between West Charlotte and Second Ward. And I think that was, I don't know if I've hit everything. There were some organizations, the Moles, that my mother belonged to, which was a social club, and the Lynx, of course. She wasn't a member of the Lynx, but she did belong to the Moles.
The Moles were a social club, and what exactly were they? Was it like the Lynx, or?
No, it was totally unlike the Lynx. It was more of a social party club, but it was a group of friends who got together once a month and had dinner and entertained. But that was pretty much, it was just a social club. No, the Lynx is more of a civic type organization where they do raise money and give money towards education and the arts and to help children in schools. So the Lynx have more, like sororities and fraternities, have more of a civic duty.
Mm-hmm. What year was it when you charted Jack and Jill?
Oh, Lord, I don't know. I had to be in, oh, goodness, it's been 59, 58, 59, 60, somewhere in that range.
And what percentage of the professionals that you knew, that your parents knew, if you can, for the best of your ability, that lived in Brooklyn?
Lived in Brooklyn. I don't know. Most of my friends kind of lived all over Charlotte. Lived in Brooklyn. I really don't remember. I know a lot of my friends lived in First Ward with me. Lived out here in Biddleville. It was called Biddleville then. And probably, I think more of the ones that were older, more of my sister's age group lived there. When she had her cotillion, she had it at the McCrory YWCA. But I was at the YMCA. It was probably the YMCA. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I think more of the professional people lived in Brooklyn, teachers and things lived there then, which was a little before my time, because I can think back, some of the teachers that I can think of lived there, but they were older than me.
So as far as the doctors, dentists, lawyers, business people, were the majority of their businesses in Brooklyn?
I think all of the businesses pretty much were in Brooklyn. As I can remember, if you look at Brooklyn as being Brevard Street, First, Second Street, as I said, the Daddy's building was there. There was another building that's still standing there today where a lot of the doctors had their offices and lawyers and attorneys. The churches, of course, were all over, but mostly in the Brooklyn and First Ward area. So, and I think the ministers lived in the range or near their churches at that time.
So what year did your father move his office due to urban renewal?
Let's see. When did he move his office? I'm trying to think. Was I We moved here in 1959, the fall, and I think his office must have been moved in the 60s. I think I was in high school, so it must have been in the early 60s. And after they, you know, tore down all of the buildings over in Brooklyn, Dr. Watkins's building was torn down. He moved over here to Biddleville.
Were they okay with that, or did it inconvenience them in any way?
I'm sure it was an inconvenience to move all of that, and I just know that he had to go. He didn't have any place else to go, but the Queen City Pharmacy, who was on 2nd Street, Mr. Phillips built a building over here on Batesford Road. So Daddy and Dr. Wilkins moved over here. I think Dr. Lowe moved over to another location. Queen City Pharmacy was in the building. It's actually where the Batesford or West End Fish Market is now. Mm-hmm. That's the building he was in. And it's a church back in where his office was. And most of the patients were displaced too. So it didn't matter that they were leaving that area because there were no more people that they serviced. Most of the people they serviced were moved to Biddleville or to other areas around Charlotte. So at that point, you know, more and more people had cars. So it was no need for them to stay where they were. The patients weren't living near the offices anymore, so I'm sure that was an inconvenience for them.
What is the fondest memory that you have of your father?
I don't think I have one in particular, because we used to do, I don't know, a lot of stuff together, you know, going on calls, and I don't know. I think I have a lot of memories. I can't pick out one that was more than the other, because we did, you know, a lot of traveling together, and I guess, you know, just having him around when I grew up, because he did see me through all the way up until I was married and divorced, and so he was with me a long time in my life.
So can you tell me a little bit about your father, his character?
I don't know how to answer all these questions because you never think about him. He was disciplinarian. I know he wanted everything done. We laugh because I used to know when I was do things wrong, I was always getting a spanking for one thing or another. But my dad only spanked me once, and that's because he told me to do something, and I just looked at him and said, I ain't. And I must have been about 5 years old, and he chased me all over the house. I ran from him. So when he finally caught me, I think he was a little mad. But that was the only time. So I don't know why I did that. But so after that, he could just kind of look at you. He had a very deep voice and big hands. And so when he say do something, you kind of did it. He didn't think much about it. He loved medicine. We used to talk about people. He never really had any hobbies other than, you know, other people had hobbies. He didn't have hobbies. He just did medicine. He loved medicine. And I think he liked to practice. And that's pretty much what his life revolved around. When we'd have dinner and Mama being a nurse, our conversations were about his patients or the day at the hospital or, you know, what was going on. So that was pretty much his conversation. But he was very honest and told you what he was going to do and not do, and that's the way it was. But I think I knew he had a soft spot for me because I could get most of what I wanted from him, as could my sister. So, although he would be gruff sometimes, he would just roll his eyes and just go, okay, you know. And I remember one of the funniest things when I was dating and I went out one night and I made the mistake of not having my sweater with me, and I went in my room to get my sweater, and the young man I was going out with was standing, and then he said, come here, boy. And he just looked at me and said, where are you going? And I just came out. I said, Daddy, I told you where we were going, so leave him alone. And he just go, okay. He would never say anything to me. And then one other night I had gone out. Daddy comes running out of the house with a gun in his hand. And the boy that was with me goes, And I'm like laughing. I'm like, oh my God, what is he up to now? Because to me it was funny. And I don't think the guy I was with thought it was very funny. And then he said, come with me. He said, I think somebody's trying to break in the house next door. Come and go with me. And the boy said, oh, okay, all right, sure. I guess he said, I'd rather face a burglar.
Oh my God.
So, you know, so he was kind of funny. And, you know, and he never thought, I said, Daddy, what were you thinking? He said, well, I didn't think about that. I was just, he said, you all just happened to drive up when I was going over there.
So, you know, funny
things like that. Yeah.
Okay. I guess I did have some favorite times.
You did. Those sound wonderful. Okay, so I took a picture of a bridge party, mm-hmm. and a fashion show. Mm-hmm. What group was that?
It wasn't my mother and Mrs. Rand and Mrs. Williams. Lizette Williams gave a bridge party. That was things they used to do. They were invited, so they would give bridge parties. And this was at the Excelsior Club, which was at that time like the, quote, country club for black people because they didn't have one. But most of the parties and things, any dances, meetings, parties, was done at the Excelsior Club. And that was owned by Jimmy McKee. So it was known as a very nice place where you could go and have a good time, have dinner or whatever you wanted to have. But that was just a bridge party that they had, and they gave for people in Charlotte, women especially. So it wasn't a, quote, group. It was just them returning their invitations.
Well, I totally want to thank you for doing this interview a second time, because obviously you know what happened to the last interview.
You better look at the time. You might run it over.
So, but is there anything else you want to add? And I also want to get your opinion on urban renewal and how it happened, and if you can, it's as far as you can go, you know.
Urban renewal, I guess it was fine. It gave people better homes. The only thing it did was to disperse and displace a number of African Americans, because they didn't do a lot of urban renewal, quote, in white neighborhoods that I remember. What you see in Brooklyn now is totally unlike what it was. It's like the uptown area now. It's all restaurants and the arena and larger churches. And so it was like Black people always seem to have the town areas in most towns. And when they get ready to develop a town, the first people to move are usually African Americans. So it moved them further out. It made them have to go look for placing. They said they were going to give them better homes, but yeah, they had to go find them themselves. They did Earl Village, which created just more slums at that time. And it's been torn down, and redeveloped in nicer homes, I think. But it's always African Americans, their neighborhood, their culture. And it once they tend to, you know, that divide and conquer, it moves you from your comfort zones. And some people say, well, that's good. You know, we could do better, but you never know. So on a whole, it's benefited people in the Charlotte area.
Okay, well, I want to thank you again for being with me today, and this concludes our interview. Thank you, Diane White.
Thank you.